Sairam, dear listeners, you're tuned to Thursday Live on Radio Sai Global Harmony, broadcasting live from Prashanthi Nilayam, the heaven on earth. And now, Arvind from Team Radio Sai, I take great pleasure in welcoming you for yet another session of the afternoon satsang. And as always, joining me is Brother Prem. Sairam, dear Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and Sairam to all our listeners tuned in from every part of the world. A very good afternoon to everybody, and Sairam to you, Arvind, too.
Prem, I know that we had stopped last week at the point where we were discussing what we should do when we miss Swami so intensely.
True.
If I may be allowed to take this detour, you know, I was hearing this song that Raghu put as his concluding song, this song Upashramanam Asageu.
From Prema Pravaham.
From the program Prema Pravaham, and I was lost in so much nostalgia in the last 5 minutes, the things that have happened in my heart. I mean, I don't know how to express it, but this program as such, Prem, it was so fantastic and it taught so many lessons and gave so many insights.
Okay.
Maybe we can do an afternoon satsang on this program itself sometime. But some things that I would really wanted to recollect and recap was, you know, the way this program came about was through an inspiration. And I always believe, Swami has also said that inspiration is one way in which God communicates with you. So any inspiration is arising from the heart, which is the seat of God. And Professor G. Venkatraman, you know, who is heading the Radio Sai studios here.
Okay.
He had this idea that, you know, every birthday for anybody, when it is celebrated, it is always about the person. Only in Swami's case, it is always about what the devotees want. You know, the devotees want to present, and Swami never has said that, you know, my birthday should be like this, my birthday should be like that. And in fact, Swami says, I don't see anything special in my birthday. Just because you see it special, I consider it as a birthday and I allow the celebration. Otherwise, I don't want anything. So Professor G. Venkatraman had this inspiration, and this was his very intense feeling that for this Swami's birthday, how wonderful it would be. And this was the 85th birthday. And right in the beginning of the year itself, that is about 9 months before, he got this idea and he got this inspiration that why don't we have a program which is just like, you know, the Sai Bhagavatam, which narrates the glory of Swami. And the speciality will be that till now, never before it has happened that the avatar's glory is sung in the avatar's presence. As such, reliving the whole thing. You know, there was no Bhagavata Parayanam when Lord Krishna was there. The closest that we came to was when Lord Rama, the king, was sitting and he had banished Sita to the forest. Sita had delivered the twins, Lava and Kusha. And these twins had been taught the Ramayana. And they come singing the Ramayana to Ayodhya, the capital city of Lord Rama. And then, when they are brought to the court, not knowing that it is their father, they sit and sing the glory of Rama. And Rama sees his whole life pass before him. And this was the exact analogy that, you know, G.V. sir brought up and conveyed to everyone and said, this is what we should do. But you know, inspiration is fine. To go ahead, it is not a simple task because there are so many things. And especially for these landmark birthdays, you know, like the 65th birthday, the 70th birthday, 75th, you know that it is always done by devotees from around the world.
Okay.
You know, it's like some prime time slot, 5 minutes people, you know, clamor for, they want. And here, how could, the idea that came was, the student should be singing the glories of Swami. Now, how can such a big slot be given to the students? But anyway, as always, work began in right earnest, and I'm very proud and happy and privileged to say that the studio, the boys in the studio got the chance to work on this project.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the idea was, we have songs which are specially composed. Just like we have Ramakatha, which sings the glory of Rama through 5 or 6 songs, we should have a Sai Katha, which sings the glory of Sai through 5 or 6 songs. Now these 5 or 6 songs have to be specially composed, have to be specially tuned, And each song, just like in the Ramakatha, each song deals with different facet of Ramavatar. Here, each song deals with different facets of the Sai Avatar. Mm-hmm. That was the plan. And then began what can be considered as one of the most massive collaborative work, you know, because poets, different poets, professional poets, Swami students who have become poets, different people were contacted for poems. And first of all, you know, you had to shortlist what should be the content of these poems. Because what is Swami's glory? You cannot write it in 1,000 books. How can you write it into 7 songs? But an effort was made to condense them and bring out the highlights. Now these poets, after that, for tuning these songs, a lot of effort went on, which included the likes of, you know, Mandolin Srinivas. They all came up with compositions for these songs. But then what happened was, the variety in each song was tremendous. Because if you have to explain about Swami's compassion, imagine what all has to be said, and you have only 20 lines to tell it. So the idea was to use music and words in a synergistic manner so that the whole meaning comes out beautifully. Therefore, none of the tunes actually seemed to be perfect for the song. In fact, Brother Sai Prakash from the studio, one day I remember he sat down, he prayed and prayed and with great intensity sat the whole night. And he came up with a tune which was a mix of several tunes.
Okay.
And this had to be done because each line had a different feel. Mm-hmm. Each line was describing one facet of Swami's compassion. It has to have a different feel. And so it was a song that was made. And this song was actually on one of the easier topics, if I may say, about how Swami has uplifted the Vedas and the scriptures. This song was made. Now all this, while this was happening, on the other side, the plans were afoot for what would become the grandest ever birthday celebrations. And for that, programs were being drawn up and we were all wondering what would happen. So the bhajan group, the students from the institute, everyone were involved into it. They were told what is the idea and we all were told that we should pray intensely to Swami. And the way Swami responded, Prem, it was in August, August 2010. Swami said that I want to listen to this song. And then came another idea. Before showing it to Swami, what was done was this song was put onto a timeline in a video editing software and appropriate videos were placed. The idea was, as Swami's glory is being sung, people can watch it if we can establish huge screens during the 85th birthday. So a video was prepared, a commentary team made some commentary ready. And I don't remember the exact date, but in August of 2010, Swami called the whole team of students into his residence at Yajur Mandir. And it was, I was sitting there, so I can say maybe it was at best a semi-professional attempt, you know. There were mistakes in the commentary, the songs was not perfect, the visuals were also okay. But Swami was engrossed watching the video. He was so engrossed, and then he looked and said, on my birthday, this is what will happen. You know, that was just one silent word which he spoke to 2-3 boys. The elders who had assembled there, they did not hear this. They were not aware of it also. They did not even know that such a, if I can say, a coup was being planned where, you know, all the programs would get upstaged and this program would be coming. The plans were afoot because they had to coordinate from across the world. But Swami said this would be done, and Swami took such interest that he called tailors and selected the colors of the dress for each of the boys. That was the amount of advanced planning Swami started. Well, now I shall fast forward, and there were tremendous difficulties and so many hurdles. But every time after doing your best, you know, when it seemed that it would just not be enough, we would leave it to Swami. And the next day, Swami would come up with a solution. In fact, finally for giving the songs their final tunes, a great person. You must have heard of Mr. Rajkumar Bharati?
Yes, of course. Rajkumar Bharati is the great grandson of the great poet of independence struggle, in a Tamil poet. My name is Subramanya Bharati.
Exactly. Yeah. We have known him
He's a very famous classical singer too. Mr.
Rajkumar Bharati. Yeah. His great grandfather was a great freedom fighter for India and a patriot. So he got involved and the tunes came out so beautifully, so perfectly, and so many exciting things happened in the last 15 days, which I feel we should reserve for another afternoon satsang. But Prem, see, even as I think of that, you know, I get goosebumps and I get tears in my eyes, because nobody in the world knew that this would be the last physical birthday of Swami. And it was exactly like a repeat of what happened during the Treta Yuga. You know, in the Treta Yuga, Lord Rama sat on his majestic throne. His children sat in front of him and sang out his whole life story. And Lord Rama closed his eyes and his whole life passed before him. And after that, you know, after that, that is when he lets them know that you are my children. You are my children. And shortly after that, Lord Rama walks into the Sarayu River and gives up his body. Here too, you know, Swami was sitting. The whole stage had been done up like a magnificent palace. And a beautiful throne had been placed for Swami, a golden throne. And here was the Lord sitting on the golden throne. And exactly, his children were singing. His children were singing his own life. Lord Rama had to close his eyes to see his life pass before him. But Swami, he had kept his eyes open, and there was a giant screen that was playing the visuals for each of these songs. And the final song, such an apt song, such a historic song, it was called Tu Pyar Ka Sagar Hai. And as Tu Pyar Ka Sagar Hai, which means you are an ocean of love. If we get the opportunity to taste one drop, that is enough. And that song was playing on, and what happened next was simply awesome, stunning, totally unexpected and spontaneous. All the children from all the campuses of all Swami's educational institutions spontaneously began to light candles.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, passed on the candle, lit the flame, and the whole stadium in the front, everyone had lighted candles. And as this final song of the final birthday celebrations of Bhagwan was on, they did aarti, a mass aarti, not even realizing that Swami had blessed all of them with such a beautiful chance to give aarti to the Lord on his final physical birthday celebrations. You know, now when I look back on the happenings of that day, I get tears in my eyes, and these tears are only partially out of sorrow and longing, you know. More of it is out of gratitude that, Swami, even then you planned it in such a manner that the maximum number of people benefit. Every student, so many devotees who are present there, you know, in their heart, today they say that I got a chance to perform aarti to my Lord. In one single song, one single event, one single master stroke of the master plan, Swami ensured that so many hearts' desires are fulfilled. And for that birthday, he had come for darshan in the golden chariot. That was another longing of so many hearts. In one single stroke, Swami did everything. And today as we look back, we see so many acts of Swami, which we realize that it couldn't have happened had it not been part of the master plan. It just humbles me, makes me feel like dropping down onto my knees and praying to Swami, Swami, let me have the wisdom not to seek or ask for anything. For is there anything better that I could ask for that you have not planned? Everything you have planned in the most perfect and beautiful manner possible. I mean, I couldn't help going into this nostalgic mode when I heard that song. And it is beautiful, you know, that Prema Pravaham, even today, when we play it in our Sai Blossom store over here, devotees gather around and watch the videos. Unforgettable videos. Videos that have been garnered over decades of footage. Some of the most rare and beautiful footage. The lovely tunes. In fact, on that final day after the program, Swami called Mr. Rajkumar Bharati and gave him Pada Namaskar. After he took Namaskar, he came back and the first statement he said is, today, if I have to die right now, I'm ready. I don't think there's anything else left for me to achieve or fulfill in my life. I feel fulfilled and fructified. That kind of, you know, love, passion and enthusiasm for Swami is heard in those tunes. The videos are excellent. I mean, a magnificent program. And they evoke so many things, you know. But as I said, more than anything else, to anyone who had been part of this, in their heart, it arises the feeling that we need not do anything in terms of informing God or asking God. God knows the best. We just have to trust Him, have faith, and wait, and just love Him from our hearts.
Well, I think I absolutely agree with what you said, but the fact is, I think the question of waiting for something to happen also vanishes when there is pure love in the heart. Right? Mm. It's again coming to the point where the process is much, much more sweeter than the end itself.
Mm.
And we'll, of course, come back to it in the course of the discussion, but even as you're recollecting what Mr. Rajkumar Bharati said, that was enough. You know, just looking back at it, we've spent so many years with Swami. We've spent so many years seeing Swami. And, I mean, in our humble efforts, we've put so many programs in front of Swami. Swami's expressed His joy. But here's this person with that one word, with that one blessing, he felt that his life was fulfilled. Looking at it, it's like Krishna could eat one leaf and satisfy 10,000 disciples of Durvasa.
Hunger, yes.
And I think it gets us back to this discussion where it takes no effort for God to fulfill all our yearnings.
Correct.
Though we think that, you know, I've yearned for so long and I need to be, you know, compensated with so much more and so much, you know, in means of time and content. But actually it takes absolutely no time for God to repay and fill the lacuna which is there, which is created in your heart.
As you were saying during our last satsang, Prem, God is like that light. If there is darkness, just put on the switch, in a moment, the whole room is filled with light. I mean, when the lights come on, the whole space is filled with light. It is not that a bigger room takes more time to light up and a smaller room takes less time to light up. It just happens instantly. And again, as it was so nicely presented last time, all these come about because we impress our logic onto Swami, which absolutely is not true. For example, I feel if I seek from the Lord a cup of coffee, if I'm going to pray for coffee, I feel I can get it off. Because for me, getting coffee is easy. But if I think if I want to pray to the Lord for a Mercedes-Benz car, I feel that is tough because it is tough for me. I feel that it is easier for the Lord to fulfill my desire for a cup of coffee compared to a Mercedes-Benz car. That is again the mistake of me impressing my logic onto the Lord. For the Lord, both are equally easy or equally tough. What does it differ in them? I remember sitting in the darshan lines one day, and a primary school, a small child, you know, he was sitting next to me. Swami came, spoke to one of the primary school children. He created vibhuti for that boy, gave it to him, and moved in. Then I started talking to this little boy next to me, and I asked him whether Swami had given him anything before, you know, had materialized vibhuti or... So he said that yes, Swami had materialized vibhuti for him. And I asked him, what do you like more? What do you think is better? You, in the sense, would you like vibhuti from Swami? Or a ring? Or a chain? You know? At least in my mind, there is a gradation. Vibhuti is okay. A ring is a better thing. A chain, because based on the permanence of the objects or whatever reason, we feel. And based on value maybe. You know, gold is so much more costly, so must be more valuable. When I asked this boy this question, he was genuinely perplexed. He looked at me and said, "Now, which chain is it?" I said, "Yeah, what Swami creates." "And vibhuti?" I said, "Yeah, what Swami is creating." He looks at me and says, "Brother, what is the difference? Both Swami is creating, no? So both are equally valuable." For that child, it was so simple. I mean, it doesn't differ whether it is vibhuti or ring or chain or a piece of paper or Swami's hair or whatever. If it comes from Swami, it is as valuable as anything else. So where is the difference? See, so many times we make this error of impressing our logic in a wrong manner. We feel that vibhuti that Swami gives may be lesser compared to the chain that Swami gives. I mean, all that is actually rubbish. Everything from the Lord is valuable.
There's a beautiful analogy about the role perception plays, you know, from physics. Mm. Even as I'm talking to you, I'm seeing that orange mic over there. Okay, and you know, we have this idea. How do you see an orange color? Because the concept of physics says that
yes,
light,
other than orange, we are
The object absorbs all other spectrum of colors other than
orange.
color which it is, and it kind of reflects back the orange.
Correct.
Okay, so what is the necessary condition for that? That you should have white light. which means correct. The light which is shining on it should have all spectrums.
Okay.
So if we're going to see that in, say, a green light where there is no
orange
component of
different.
Orange, so the color will look different.
Correct.
So similarly, I think when we look at God or when we look at what God can do, we tend to pose our narrowness in that way we look at it. Like, it's like showing only one spectrum of light
okay.
and trying to see the color of an object. The best way you can see the actual color of the object is when you open up all the, wavelengths which are available and show white light on it, and then it'll, show its true color.
And that's possible only when you look through the eyes of God.
Yeah, only when you look at it in the absolutely broad sense as it's possible.
So, okay, coming back after this brief digression, but I feel it was such a beautiful and it will help us in our discussion further. Let's briefly and quickly recap what we had discussed last week. We started off by telling what we should do when we intensely miss Swami and feel like seeing Him.
Yeah, I think before that we asked the more important question of, is it wrong to really miss Swami?
Correct.
Is there a inherent mistake in all of us that we miss Swami once
that
in a while?
That every time when we miss, people tell us it's time to move on,
exactly.
It's time to evolve. So we discussed that there's nothing wrong, because there have been so many cases, we gave so many examples of Ananda, Ramakrishna, the Gopikas, all of them who attained God only through pining and wanting to see Him in the form.
And especially the Gopikas, that what Swami says, Swami has on many occasions said that the Gopikas, though they were appearing like regular village folk who didn't have any intellectual prowess and they were, madly in love with Krishna in that sense of, not able to understand, not being able to understand the real nature of Krishna. Swami is often told that actually Gopikas were sages who had done years and years of penance and who actually sought that state of yearning.
Oh, okay.
So, that again tells about the misconception we all have that maybe yearning and missing Swami is a kind of a lower level, in understanding.
In fact, we have heard of the Uddhava Gita.
True.
Which is supposed to be a Gita which was delivered by Uddhava to the Gopikas when... Uddhava was sent by Lord Krishna.
In a very, very cryptic way, Krishna plays that game. He sends Uddhava as though Uddhava has to go and appease and, bring some sense into the
Gopikas. He tries to use jnana, wisdom, knowledge over bhakti. And he, instead of him educating the Gopikas on jnana, he gets a lesson in bhakti and returns back to Krishna, humbled and filled with love for the Lord.
And what he realizes that, the very state which he was striving to reach through, intellectual reasoning, the Gopikas had actually reached that state through their love.
Simple love for the Lord.
Exactly. Because, the idea of every field, as we have spoken so many times before, is to give up that individuality. And when he actually saw those Gopikas, he realized that they had long given up that individuality. And they've seen Krishna and everything.
So, I think that point was comprehensively
established
that it doesn't matter, even this is one more way to the Lord. And then we went on to discuss on how best then can we utilize these moments, because these moments when you intensely miss Swami and feel the need to see Him, they are moments of great receptivity. A time when a lot can happen. They're like those acceleration bonus stages in a video game, if we can say so. So we were discussing on how we can best utilize such instances. And one of the things that came up in the discussion was that we should listen to some Swami's discourse or to the songs or read a personal diary, relive those memories, do exactly what we would have done when Swami was physically in Prashantinilayam and we were far off missing Him. Suppose I was in China and Swami is in Prashantinilayam and I suddenly miss Swami. I read Swami's discourse, put on Radio Sai and listen to the discourse, or see some pictures of Swami, see some videos of Swami. We can do the same.
And this, this aspect of revisiting some past memories, this actually could be a very, very useful process, because as you said, it's a moment of intense receptiveness. So sometimes when you revisit some of these memories and incidents which we have spent with Swami, I think it might even come up with some new meaning to us it might reveal some things which we might have missed, you know, when we went through that experience.
Oh, this has happened many times to me, Prem. Even now when I revisit my diaries, personal diaries, and look back on different... I had noted it down factually. This is what Swami said, this is what Swami did, this is what he did. Every time you revisit it and read it, there is something new that strikes. Mm-hmm. Because, as you put it, maybe our emotions are like the different colors of light. And depending on the emotion, depending on the feeling that we are feeling, we are able to see it in a different light, literally. And so, revisiting it is so beautiful.
And some of the other things which we thought of is, of course, the thing again is not to give up that moment, not to bring in reasoning and try to scuttle that feeling off.
Not allow the head to spoil the heart's party.
You know, I'm just reminded of one of my seniors who had such a similar moment, you know, not in the recent times. This was after he had actually graduated from the university.
Mm-hmm.
Swami was physically still with us. But he was working elsewhere in a city. And I mean, it was a typical day. He just came back from work.
Mm-hmm.
He came back to the room where he was staying. He was staying with a few other of his classmates, Swami students. So it so happened that he just kind of, you know, played some song from his student days.
Okay.
Which we had sung so many times before. And in that moment, he didn't know what happened. He was just overcome with such pining and, you know, you can't call it pain, but he was just flooded with feelings for Swami and love for Swami and that pain of separation. And he said, in that intense moment, he actually got the highest of experiences.
Wow.
Because when he looked around, he couldn't see anything but Swami. And he was in that state for his roommates were staying with him. You know, later came and told us that he was in that state for nearly 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, seeing Swami everywhere.
Yeah, he saw Swami everywhere. Who came to him, he saw Swami in them. And he couldn't come out of that state for a long, long time. In fact, they had taken him out. They had got dinner for him. And, you know, they brought him back. They tried speaking to him. They put him to sleep. He had no idea of all these things.
Oh.
He was in the state where he was seeing only Swami. And it came out of that moment of, you know, intense...
It's totally understandable because when we read the Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna's stories, we read about such things happening to the Gopikas, where they go and, you know, they hug the creepers, they talk to the bees, they talk to the flowers, they talk to the trees, things which look crazy in the eyes of the world. But Swami says that it's always like that. You know, for a God-intoxicated man, the whole world looks crazy. And for a world intoxicated, for the person intoxicated in the world, a person who wants God looks crazy. So craziness or madness is just a matter of perspective. But Swami says, out of all the madnesses that afflict man, God madness is the least harmful and the most beneficial. And when you were talking about that, you know, student friend of yours who had this experience, I remember this famous Kavali, you know, Swami used to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Swami loves it. I mean, I'm sorry to say Swami used to love it. Swami loves it and he used to personally ask for this.
Mm-hmm.
And the first line of the Kavali goes as, Mohabbat ki kami dil mein agar ehsaas hota hai, zara jhaako to paoge ki sai paas hota hai. The meaning is so beautiful. It says, if at all you feel an acute shortage of love in your life, just look around and you'll see right by your side there is Sai waiting to fill it with love divine. And that is what exactly happened in those moments of intense yearning and missing. You feel that you are missing the Lord, you don't have the Lord and you pine so much. Instantly it is filled with so much of Swami's love. And this song, this Kavali, Swami loved it so much. In fact, during one of the convocation dramas, the drama was supposed to be on Chaitanya. You know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who pined for Lord Krishna. You know, at that time, I think Swami didn't go into these details that this is the Sai form of the avatar, that is the Krishna form of the avatar. He said, Chaitanya should sing this song. You know, that. But that song had the line as, Sai bina raha na jaye, which means I cannot live without Sai. So for the sake of accommodating this song in the drama, they had to change the lyrics. The lyrics were changed into Shama bina raha na jaye. Everywhere, wherever Sai came, Sai was replaced with Shama because Swami wanted this Kavali. It's a Kavali. You know, in every other way, logically, again, you know, logically is a way you should never see divine things. But if you see logically,
Chaitanya is a Bengali saint.
Chaitanya is a Bengali saint and he never sang in the Kavali style. But that is what Swami said, Kavali Kavali, which means I want Kavali and I want this. And therefore in the drama, one of the finale songs was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu singing Shama Bina Rahana Jai. And this is a famous Kavali that I'm sure every devotee would have heard. And if at all there is someone who has not heard, I think they must hear it right away. Let's play the other variant of that same Kavali, which says that whenever you long for the Lord, you will feel His love and Him surrounding you always.
श्याम बिन रहा न जाए श्याम बिन रहा न जाए चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए श्याम बिन रहा न जाए श्याम बिन रहा न जाए जब से देखा तुझको श्याम मेरे दर्श के प्यासे नैना सांझ सवेरे जब से है देखा तुझको श्याम मेरे दर्श के प्यासे नैना सांझ सवेरे मिट मर जाए तुझ पे हमसे न रुके तू जिंदगी सौंप दे हम चरणों में तेरे यू जिंदगी सौंप दे हम चरणों में तेरे यू जिंदगी सौंप दे हम चरणों में तेरे यूं मन मंदिर से जाओ न श्यामा मन मंदिर से जाओ न श्यामा चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए चैन नाए मोहे चैन नाए श्याम बिन रहा न जाए श्याम बिन रहा न जाए श्याम बिन रहा न जाए
Interesting, Arvind. I mean, that was from a drama on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which was staged, I think, sometime in mid-90s or early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, this sports meet season, we usually have that sports meet cultural dramas, right?
As part of
the cultural meet, you have dramas by every campus. I think this time the Vrindavan drama is about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Oh, wow. That will be interesting to look
interesting
forward
and
to.
A good coincidence. And, I mean, when we are at it, there are so many programs coming in the next few days. Tomorrow is the annual sports and cultural meet, the morning and evening. Dear listeners, you can watch all the programs live on our website, the live video webcast. I think it should start around 8:30. We will get you the times, you know, once we get to know them. And that will be in the morning. We'll have the March Pass. As always, it starts with the March Pass, followed by the program by the Vrindavan campus, and then by the campus at Prashanthi Nilayam. And in the afternoon, we'll have the first program by the Tiny Tots of the primary school, which shall be followed by the Anantapur campus, the girls' campus. And following day, I think that's on the 11th, that's tomorrow. 12th and 13th, we have the Balvikas alumni meet. So on 12th and 13th morning, we'll have programs by the Balvikas alumni. And 12th and 13th evening, we'll have these dramas, which are by the Vrindavan campus, the Prashanthi Nilayam campus.
And 14th will be the prize distribution.
Prize distribution. And I think there's a drama by the school also this time.
Correct.
So there's a lot of interesting cultural and sporting events which are coming.
And Prem, I got a sneak preview at the story that has been drawn up for the drama by the school boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say this much, that they are fast catching up on their Institute brothers. That is another drama that we can look forward to. I think it's going to be a beautiful season of sports and cultural activities. One filled week of joyful working.
And it's a beautiful way, because Swami often has emphasized on the importance of Uttarayanam, which starts on January 14th.
What is Uttarayanam?
Uttarayanam, astronomically, it's the time when the sun starts its northward journey.
Okay,
it's
correct.
It's basically the start of the summer months, if you could.
And I remember Swami used to tell in the discourse that this northward movement of the sun, it is when the sun moves towards the Himalayas, which is the residence of Lord Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
So he used to say that this is a perfect time for one to focus one's mind also moving northwards towards divinity, you know. This is the time when you, if you spend on divinity, it will benefit you the most. In fact, in the great battle at Mahabharata, on the 10th day, the grandsire Bhishma, you know, he has got a boon from his father that he can choose the time of his death. He falls, a great hero falls. He is the grandsire for both the Pandavas and the Kauravas. And he says that I shall wait till the day of Uttarayanam before I give up my body, because that is a very holy time. So therefore it is said that before Uttarayanam comes, Uttarayanam should be the culmination when you are lost and when you are doing everything. Your thought, word and deed is for the Lord. And therefore, just like even grandsire Bhishma prepared, all of us need to prepare. And Swami has made that so easy for all the students, because before the Uttarayanam, the one and a half months is preceded by preparation for the annual sports and cultural meet, be it drama or the sporting events. And all of them are doing it with the single objective that, you know, Swami should be happy with the efforts. So in a way, you know, not in a way, in every way possible, you see that all the efforts that are being done just to please the Lord. So that kind of sets in, and at Uttarayanam, that is on Shankranti, you can see that beautiful thing happening. And Swami, you know what he has done? He has put the prize distribution ceremony on the Uttarayanam day, on the Shankranti day. It is as if, you know, for all the efforts done till now, on the day, the Lord is gifting the fruits of the action. What a beautiful way. And all this, when the boys do, it is done so unconsciously. That is why once, you know, Swami had said that all the sadhana that a student has to do is to just follow the hostel schedule on a daily basis and on a yearly basis. If that much is done, there is no need of any other sadhana. Just follow the discipline sincerely. And the Lord, you know, what can I say about how loving and how perfect and how beautiful are His plans? And if we extrapolate that, I'm sure that is how He has planned all our lives. We just have to follow Him, love Him, and seek Him from within, and follow the advice that He gives. The rest He takes care Himself.
Actually, that is the beautiful thing, you know, when Swami often says that follow any one teaching of mine, and that will actually make you follow everything else. It's a very, very profound statement, I think, which needs a lot of deep thought. Maybe sometime we will dwell on that. But it is like that, you know, even this one thing, that whatever Swami does is for our good. It is like, no, whatever Swami does to the students, it is for the students' good. Whatever Swami does has done for the devotees, it is for the devotees' good. And whatever Swami has done for the non-devotees, non-believers, I think that also is for their good. And I think even if we take this lesson to our heart, I think, you know, the understanding, the complete understanding which it can bestow is tremendous.
Exactly. In such a state, we will not be elated by anything that's happening. We will not be depressed by anything that's happening, because everything is running according to a perfect master plan, and we are sure of it. You know, I am reminded, have I ever recollected that wonderful episode of my classmate when Swami had taken him to Chennai during Atirudra Mahayagnam?
Yeah, just because that car analogy with Swami is...
On surrender.
Surrender.
And when Swami was explaining what is surrender, Swami said that true surrender is, you must tell yourself, whatever happens is for my good, is for my good. And maybe for the benefit of those who haven't heard it, I'll briefly recap this episode. You know, this boy was supposed to give a talk in Hindi, and Swami previous day asked him to ask if he has any doubts.
Mm-hmm.
And he had asked Swami, you know, what is Sharanagati? Swami told, you tell me what is Sharanagati. He said, Swami, Sharanagati or surrender means giving up everything for the Lord. Swami then looked at him and said, sir, God doesn't want anything from you. And then Swami gave this example of the car gear. He said, you know, whenever you shift the gears of the car from the first gear or second gear or third gear, when the car is in gear, it runs properly. The problem comes only when you have to shift between the gears. And that is when you use the clutch. And Swami said, in life too, you know, just like the gear is front and back and front and back, Swami said, life too, you always have joys and sorrows and joys and sorrows. In joy, it's fine. In sorrow, it's fine. When you shift from joy to sorrow, or when you shift from sorrow to joy, that's when the pain, that's when the problem comes. Because one throws you to heights of elation, the other throws you down into abysmal depths of depression. And Swami said, at that time, you should use the clutch of Sharanagati, which is surrender, which is nothing but telling yourself that everything is for my good. Idi na manchi kosame, as Swami would put it. So this boy nodded. The next day, he gave a talk which was, according to everybody, a very brilliant talk in Hindi.
Mm-hmm.
According to everybody other than Swami. Because when Swami came to the dining hall after the evening program and they were having dinner, Swami asked, how was this boy's talk? Some of the people said, Swami, it was very good, everything. They praised him to the skies, but Swami said, no. It was totally bad. The boy got hurt. He got hurt because the one person whose opinion mattered the most for him did not seem to be supporting him. Everybody else, it doesn't matter what they think. Swami felt his talk was bad. He was feeling sad. And in fact, Swami had asked him what he's speaking about. He had told Swami that he's speaking about Guru.
Mm-hmm.
What is the meaning of Guru? But then Swami said, see, he did not speak anything about Sharanagati. Inside, the boy rebelled. He said, Swami, in his mind, he thought, Swami, I never told you I'm going to speak on Sharanagati. I had told you I'll speak about Guru. If you wanted, you should have changed it. This is unfair. This is very bad. Why is this happening? You know, he was feeling very bad. At that time, Swami was on the chair, you know, the sofa chair, and he asked to move in between the lines of the students who were dining. This boy was upset and he did not even want to look at Swami because he was feeling let down. Swami comes close to him and says, where is your Sharanagati, sir? Where is your Sharanagati? And then in a moment, it hits him. You know, Swami had said that whatever happens, you should tell this is for my good. This is for my good. Just the previous day, Swami had bestowed that lesson. And here he was, right royally flouting that, you know. He realized it. He fell on his knees and he told Swami, Tapai poindi shaminchandi. Please forgive me, it was a mistake. Swami said, yes, have Sharanagati. And then Swami gave him a smile, saying that he was so happy with his talk. And everything was understood. So too, you know, Sharanagati or true surrender, if we really love the Lord, it just means whatever happens, irrespective of the outcome, we should always be able to tell ourselves, this is for my good, this is for my good. That is something we should try to inculcate at such moments when we intensely miss Swami. When we are missing Swami like that, let us tell ourselves that this is for my good. If I am not able to see Swami right now in front of my eyes, it is for my good. It is for my good. Let us channelize this to increase our love for Swami and never away get a negative thought that, what is this Swami, why are you letting me down? These are detrimental to our own progress.
Actually, you know, in this incident, there's another lesson actually.
Hmm.
When Swami says, you have to be happy whatever happens, which means something's going to happen. You know, literally, because when Swami says, be careful, which means you're going to get a situation where you have to be careful.
Hmm.
You know, Swami says, don't get angry, then which means there are going to be situations which are going to make you angry.
Correct.
And I'm just giving you the hint in advance, don't get angry. And so I think it's an ongoing process. You know, like the other analogy which Swami often gives is when you hammer a nail into the wall, you know, the nail is meant to be inside. But after you hammer it, you pull it out, trying to make sure that it has gone in properly. So the very action for which you're hammering it inside, you have to do the opposite one to make sure that it is perfectly there. And Swami says faith also is the same thing. You know, faith is hammered in, the same Lord for whom you're having the faith will do, you know, create situations to shake that faith. And Swami would say, once that nail is firm, then the picture of the Lord can be hung on it.
Exactly. So Prem, it becomes tough for us to decide whether the Lord is testing or... Sometimes I feel, why does the Lord need to test? I mean, He knows what we are worth. So at sometimes I felt the Lord never tests. It is we who are testing ourselves.
See, I remember, you know, even as you're saying this, a little humorous incident comes to my mind. You know, and one of the students who wished to stay back after their studies, this tug of war was going on. Swami was telling the boys who were there to go and, you know, take care of their parents, do some work. But these boys were just hanging on. They were just trying to, you know, they were just hoping that Swami will allow them to stay. And it reached one point when Swami called these boys and said, No, I want you to go. And they were saying, Swami, please. And Swami had to tell boys, I'm not testing you. I want you to go. Because, you know, Swami would have realized that it's so difficult for us to understand when Swami is testing us and, you know, when it is meant to be a command.
And that is where I feel this thing, that everything happens for my good, is for my best. It comes so handy. It doesn't matter what Swami says, what Swami does, what He gives, what He does not give. You know, I feel you must narrate what you told me yesterday, Prem, about those Vedam dhotis that Swami gave, and, you know, how a single word could make a happy moment into a sad one and a sad one into a happy one.
Yeah, you know, very interestingly, this happened, you know, when it was a beautiful day when the old students were going out to distribute blankets, which they do every year during the winter months. They go out in the middle of the night, go to one of the railway stations, look for homeless people and distribute blankets. So one thing is, the activity itself is so beautiful. But what used to happen is, in the process of going and doing that, because we would travel as a group of 10 or 20 of us in these small trucks with all those things. And in that journey, we used to have a lot of satsang, and we used to sing Swami's bhajans. And many of them, I mean, it used to be a wide diaspora of alumni, some of them from very old students to the recent most.
Different batches.
So we used to get to hear a lot of nice things. So it was, you know, one of those times when two of the alumni shared this with us.
Okay.
Now, it seems one day Swami came out. This happened, I think, in the late 80s. Okay, Swami came out and Swami started distributing His robes, which Swami used to do quite often.
Correct.
You know, I think we also have had the opportunity to receive one from Swami. So that day, Swami just came out of the interview room and started throwing ropes, like how he would distribute apples or, you know, any other prasada. So there was a boy behind him holding a bundle of those ropes which Swami used to use, and Swami is picking and, you know, picking and choosing boys to whom Swami will throw it to.
Okay.
So Swami was throwing it to a few. Swami was standing just outside the interview room. Swami is giving it to a few boys in the bhajan group. A few boys were seated in the portico. So some of them got and some of them didn't get.
Okay.
So that day in the hostel, there was this literally a kind of a strike by boys who didn't get.
Okay.
Because they were so sad, they were so upset, they didn't want to have dinner, and those boys were sitting and crying in the rooms. So the warden, they didn't get a robe from Swami. So this came to the notice of the warden. Narasimhamurthy sir was the warden then. So the next morning he came and told Swami this. Said, Swami, those boys who didn't get the robes, they're very, very upset. They're all crying. They're refusing to eat. And Swami said, you go and tell them that all those boys who got robes from Swami, I gave it to them because they're going to leave Swami.
Oh, okay.
And all those boys who didn't get robes from Swami, I didn't give them because anyway they're going to stay with Swami. And when, you know, warden sir went and gave this information to the boys in the hostel, all those boys who had received the robe
became sad.
They became sad. They started crying and they refused to eat. And of course, the interesting thing was, the two boys the two alumni who shared with us this incident, both are settled in Prashanthi Nilayam. You know, they have their own.
Both got robes or didn't get?
Yeah, one got a robe and one didn't get a robe.
Okay. Oh, so it.
So,
again, this goes to show that it's all a matter of perspective. Those who get the robe should know the truth, that they got it because it's best for them. Those who did not get the robe should know the truth, that they did not get it because it is best for them. And I think that is the beauty of this kind of surrender, where whatever happens, we accept it with joy. You know, one more example. Well, this can also be as a thing to do when we intensely miss Swami. At the same time, there's another beautiful example of how, whatever situation you are in, you're able to use it in the best possible manner to benefit you. You know, there is a doctor, Dr. Shrikant Sola, you know, he was, Yeah.
Cardiologist in the Whitefield.
Correct. And he narrated something very beautiful. You know, he said, every day as he would sit in the doctor's block and watch the darshan proceedings, you know, Swami used to come out and sit and the Veda chanting will be on and then the bhajans and then Swami would receive aarti and go. For almost 1 hour or at least half an hour, Swami would be sitting outside. And he said that I observed that everybody is so intensely concentrating on Swami. The slightest movement of his finger, if he beckons to somebody, they come. They are able to catch it. The slightest, you know, Swami twitches towards a handkerchief, somebody picks the handkerchief and gives Swami. Everybody is on a complete alert to Swami's movements, to Swami's needs, if we can say so. He just felt that this Swami who is seated within me, at least for this Swami who is seated here, there are so many in that state of alertness. What about the Swami sitting in my heart? I'm the only one who can give him that kind of dedicated alertness. And how can I be neglecting him? And thus started his beautiful meditations, if we can say so, where he would sit and intensely concentrate with all alertness on the Swami sitting in his heart, just as we would do to Swami outside. And he says, I see no difference. Swami speaks to me, Swami gives me advice, Swami gives guidance, and some of the things that he has accomplished, some of the things he has done, some of the things he has spoken, some of the things he has revealed, you know, it's something for the heart to experience. You can be sure that this is not fancies or whims. This is something divine in it. And he says that there's nothing special about him. It is Swami that who is speaking so. And he says, anybody can establish this contact with Swami. Nobody needs to depend on anybody else. That is the beauty, you know. With our Swami, each one of us can establish our own inner contact. Maybe this is another thing that we should do when we intently miss Swami. Let us close our eyes and let us visualize Him, imagine Him, whatever. Let us focus all our attention to the Swami in our hearts.
It's quite interesting what you shared about Dr. Sola. Because this was something which had struck me quite some time back. Because I used to think, you know, here is this Swami. There's this one Swami for a million devotees. Okay, and all said and done, the physical Swami had only 24 hours.
Correct.
Okay, and in that 24 hours, He had to accommodate so many of us. And we were vying and we were fighting for that time. Okay. But the fact is, each one of us has a Swami within us. And that Swami has no other job but you.
And He is neglected.
Okay. And in the sense, neglected is of course one thing. The other thing is, we are pained and we are pining for that Swami who is having 24 hours and who is having million devotees to, share His time. We are pained and we are, crying that He is not talking to us. But here is one Swami within us who has nobody but you. You are the only devotee and He is not talking to us. Are we not pained about that? I mean, are we not crying for that Swami to talk to us? Imagine you're put in a room and Swami is there and there is nobody else, only you and Swami. And if Swami doesn't talk to you, then won't the pain be a thousandfold when Swami is sitting in the Kulwanth hall with thousands of devotees and then not talking to us?
Naturally, Prem. I mean, that is a very powerful and true point. If the Swami who is there all for us is not speaking, we should be pained much more than the Swami who has come for the whole world. And you know, this two Swami concept that you brought in, that there is one Swami who is there for the world, the other Swami in us, for all for us. I had also, started this practice of always speaking to two Swamis. Mine was more out of desperation because I didn't seem to be getting further or getting anything with the physical Swami. So I thought I'll get it with my Swami who is in my heart. And I used to speak to Him. I was very, very possessive about Him. You know, I used to imagine also, I'm walking on the road and I used to imagine that my Swami also walks along with me by my side. He's holding my hand. And I would even hold imaginary conversations with Him. I would tell Him that, these boys are coming here. Don't speak to them. Okay, because I want you to always be with me and talk to me. So all that, So this Swami is only for me. I am the person whom He has come for and He'll do everything for me. In fact, I would say sometimes, Swami, why don't you walk on this side of the road? Because there are vehicles coming. Let me walk this side. I don't want a vehicle to bump into you. Or sometimes I would say, be careful, look down, what is there? There's a banana peel there. Avoid it and walk. Just as you would do to a friend. Then one day suddenly, you know, I felt that all this was some kind of imagination, hallucination. I'm deluding myself, fooling myself. What is this stupidity I felt? Suddenly, you know, that is the way of the mind. The way about the mind is, it is so dependent on our faith, Prem. If you are convinced that Swami is listening to you, the mind provides you with 1,000 reasons why it is true that whatever you are communicating with Swami. When you don't have that faith, the same mind will provide you 1,000 reasons on why you are hallucinating, why you are deluded and why you are foolish. That is where faith comes so important. Okay, we have to have that faith. But anyway, this was a point where my faith seemed to be lost and I felt that this was all a hallucination, all imagination. I just left it. And in fact, I felt I'm all alone. I had nobody. Many days passed, they turned into weeks, and months later, one day, I have a dream. That dream is so realistic where Swami is coming and speaking to me and so many things happened there. He revealed some things which helped me later on, helped me take some steps. That is another story by itself. But what happened was, in the dream Swami says, come, let's go for a walk. And when we're walking, Swami asks, won't you hold my hand? And the dream, it is so realistic that I don't know I'm dreaming. So I'm thinking, my God, what I used to tell him months ago, he's telling me now. This is what I think. Then I think, how does he know? Because you see, in the dream, I'm thinking that this is the real Swami, you know, the Swami who has come for the world kind of. So I'm thinking in the dream, how does he know stuff that I have spoken to my Swami? And then we are walking on the road and Swami says, you know, vehicle is coming from that side. I feel little insecure. Can I come and walk on that side of you? Again, I think, how does Swami know this, man? This is what I'm thinking. And as we are walking, Swami suddenly says, can you carry me? Shall we go behind the tree? I ask, why, Swami? He says, see, the boys are coming from there. If they see me, they'll surround me and start talking to me. I don't want to do that. I am yours. And at that time, you know, I turned to him and said, tell me how you know all this. Tell me how you know all this. Because in my dream, I'm thinking, I have not told you anything. These are all my own imaginations. And Swami tells me, till about few months back, you used to tell and share everything with me. I was so happy. Now you have stopped. Because you have shared, I know all this. But now you have stopped. Why have you stopped? Please continue. And his face was so sad that even today when I think of it, I think that I am so selfish that I am always thinking that I am pining and missing the Lord. Not realizing that how much ever I pine for the Lord, 10 times more the Lord is pining for the devotee. Every time again, you know, we always think from our perspective. In fact, when I watch the movie Annamaya, there you see Annamaya pining for merger with the Lord, that anybody who is watching the movie, you know, their heart bleeds for Annamaya, thinking, Lord, why don't you grant this wish for Annamaya, the sage, Saint Annamaya. He's singing your glories and with his songs, he's able to inspire so much love in so many peoples. So much he's doing for you, why don't you grant his wish? And then when it comes to the last scene of the movie, I broke down, Prem, because it was so beautiful. The Lord appears before him and he asks, Lord, I have waited so long for you. Why did you not come? And the Lord, you know, he says, Annamaya, if you merge in me, who will sing for me? I will miss you so much. Because I will miss you so much, I didn't grant you this merger. We do not realize that every time we pine and pain for the Lord is also pining and paining for us 10 times more. So, yes, whenever we miss and pine for the Lord, let us concentrate on the Swami in our hearts. Because it is that same Swami who, when He wills, when the time is right, when everything is perfect, will manifest as the Swami before our eyes also.
And I think we are kind of pushed to that predicament today. I know Swami in a way has merged the outer Swami and inner Swami, and our yearning is kind of more focused on what Swami is, you know, with each one of us. And I used to think of this thing. You're talking about the 2012, you know, catastrophe and you know, things like how, I mean, Dr. Shrikant Solavi spoke about, and one of the things which he often says is how important it is at the end of 2012 and the period we are in right now to think more of Swami, because he said it is not a, you know, a period where the world is going to be destroyed and remade, but he said it is going to be a literally a spiritual upheaval kind of a thing. So it is very important to concentrate on Swami more during this period.
Is not only Shrikant Sola, Prem. I have read so many places. I mean, I on the internet, of course, there are so many, and they come from Christian scriptures. Many people who have said that this period of transition between 2012 to 2013 is a period of spiritual upheaval, and those who focus their energies and concentration on the Lord will be benefited and will be harbingers of this peace and beautiful times. And in such times, I think we should all feel blessed that we are missing Swami so much and thinking of Him. I feel we are thinking of Him more than what we thought of Him when He was physically here.
Very true. You know, I used to think, suppose somebody gives you a huge diamond and says, keep this safe. Okay, let's say we put it in our pocket, you know, in a place where we can feel it all the time. So I think then what would happen is we would go around with our regular work.
Correct.
And, you know, once in a while feeling if it's there in the pocket and feel safe. Suppose the same diamond is taken away from you and, say, kept in a corner of the room, and somebody says, keep an eye on it. So now what happens is, no, all our focus has to be on the diamond. We cannot move out of that room and do anything else.
Even if you're doing everything else, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, is the diamond safe? Is it fine there?
Yeah, you'll have to keep looking at that. You know, the idea of having it physically with you is, you can go about doing your work. But if it is put in the corner of the room, and if you're told that you cannot remove it from there, then you cannot do anything else. You will have to be in that room. You have to keep yourself focused on that diamond lying there. Literally, I think that's what Swami has done to us. Mm-hmm. As long as Swami is physically there, I think most of us felt that we could come back to Swami. You
know? Correct.
We could come a weekend, we could come the year end, or we could come during our vacations. But now, we are in a point where we have to focus on Swami every time.
Every day.
All through the day and all through the year. And talking about pining and yearning, what Shirdi Baba used to say, the two words which he used to say, and I think he refers to his guru and what his guru had taught him, and he says Shraddha and Saburi, right? Faith and patience. I think these are cornerstones of yearning. But the beautiful thing is, this word Shraddha, I was just looking up, because we hear it in so many contexts. Because one of the famous quotations where Shraddha is used is
Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam.
Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam. And in that context, Shraddha actually stands for yearning.
Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam means
earnestness.
One that has yearning and earnestness will be given wisdom.
Will be conferred wisdom upon. But here, actually, Shri Baba says Shraddha is faith.
Okay.
And when I just looked up in the dictionary, Sanskrit word Shraddha, I mean, it has some different meanings, and the beautiful thing is some of them are so way apart. In the spirit of that word, Shraddha also means calmness of mind, and Shraddha also means longing.
Longing is intensity, and
you associate restlessness with longing and earnestness, right?
Agitation of the mind,
a kind of a burning aspiration.
Correct.
Okay, but Shraddha is also faith.
Okay, faith is steady as a rock.
Faith is calmness. I mean, if you have complete faith in God, it will express itself as equanimity. So here you're talking of Shraddha as equanimity as earnestness. So when you say Shraddha and Saburi, Saburi being patience, it is like, be as restless as you can. Like I think it's Socrates who said, if you pine for God like you pine for air when your head is immersed in water, then you will get God. So Shraddha actually is that kind of burning aspiration and yearning and restlessness, and Saburi is patience.
Yes, you have that burning aspiration and yet you are serene and
calm.
You know, talking about determination and wanting to achieve this, we were saying this, Swami has said, he says that having desired or having longed to achieve something, long and desire and put in efforts till either the desire is fulfilled or till you collapse from the effort. It is so beautiful. Maybe we'll go into the details of that after listening to that beautiful Padyam in Swami's golden voice.
Yeah, it's a very famous Padyam where Swami talks of the importance of persistence.
Pattina pattedo pattani pattenu pattune gidudaka povakunde. అడిగిన దేదియో అడగనే అడిగను అడిగిన దిడుదా కదువుండే తలచిన దేదియో తలచనే తలచెను తలపు తీరుడుదాక పోవకుండే కోరిన దేదియో కోరనే కోరెను కోరికే చెల్లుడు దాకా విడవకుండే
వాట్ ఎవర్ హీ వాంటెడ్ టు డిజైర్ అండ్ ఆస్క్ హీ ఆస్క్
పోరు పడలేక తానైన ద్రోవలయు వడలు తెలియక నీవైన అడుగవలయు తిరిగి పోవుట భక్తుని దీక్ష కాదు.
Yeah, I think, Arvind, what I'll do is I'll quickly read out the meaning of this Padhyam for the benefit of our listeners. It goes, having grasped what ought to be grasped, hold on with a tight grasp till the end.
Mm.
Having desired what ought to be desired, hold on till the desire is fulfilled.
Mm.
Having asked what ought to be asked, hold on till you receive that you've asked for.
Mm.
Having thought what ought to be thought, hold on till the thought comes true. Either he has to bless you out of frustration with your prayers, or you have to ask with all your heart intensely. It is not proper in the part of a devotee to give up halfway. Very, very powerful Padhyam of Swami, and there used to be so much of power in it when every time Swami used to say it, saying that, you know, it is not a nature of a devotee to give up. Either God has to get, you know, bugged of you pestering him and grant you your wish, or in the process of asking, you have to collapse.
Which means that there are chances that you may ask and don't get, and you collapse from the effort also. But faith comes in thinking that that is also good for me. Oh, what a thing, Prem, because, you know, I feel sometimes it is better that way, because I always want to know now then, if I am going to put in this effort, I'll put in, I will persist always. In the end, I don't know, I may not achieve it also. Okay, because that's what Swami says, either you fall from the effort or you get what you want. So I may fall from the effort and not achieve it. And I feel that is one reason many times Swami doesn't reveal what is in store for us, because say today if I know that I'm not going to achieve it, do you think I'll be putting in
effort? It's a gloomy thing. I mean, if you look at it, there are two ways of looking at this whole Padhyam, I feel. You know, one thing is, you may get or you may not get. So, there's a kind of pessimistic finish to this Padhyam. You know, somebody who is a little negative in their approach might say that, you know, what's the point? You might not get in the end. But I think the very significant and profound lesson which Swami is leaving in this Padhyam is, it actually doesn't matter whether you get or you don't get. Maybe the asking is so important. Maybe the holding on is so much more important than actually receiving what you ask for.
No, I said it this manner because many times it happens, we wonder, why is Swami not telling? I had also, you know, thought, Swami, I want to know what my future holds for me. Why don't you tell me? Because I used to think, if you tell me, Swami, I know whether I can, you know, I can work for it. Say, for example, if I'm playing cricket, a very crude example, if I'm playing cricket or football, if you let me know that I'm going to become a football player, I'll give up cricket and start concentrating on football. But I do not realize that for some reason, the Lord wants me to play both cricket and football. It's like the rock in the push story. When the Lord tells you to push a rock, it may not be because He wants to move the rock. It may be because He wants to build your bicep muscles. In the same way, when the Lord wants us to do something, you know, many times there have been singers who have, you know, ended up disappointed, saying that, all the time I practiced to get one chance to sing in Swami's presence, I never got that chance. We do not realize that when Swami makes us practice and sing, it may not be because we have to sing in His presence. We do not know what that singing is doing for us. The singing is a rock which we don't have to move. It may be building something within us.
I think it's a learning which will come with time, where you, you know, accept by saying that whether you get it or you don't get it, there is a reason for it. And I think this will come with various experiences.
Mm.
As I mentioned earlier, I think in last week, when you say we keep concluding every now and then. We have an experience, we conclude. Then we have another experience, then again we conclude. I think the point is, I think when the actual understanding sets in, you won't even realize that it has come in. It's just built on so many experiences, varied, you know, so many ups and so many downs, that eventually it just crystallizes without your knowledge. But we are, you know, in chemistry we have this idea of crystallizing your product. When you allow it to crystallize on its own, you get the most beautiful crystal.
Correct. Most pure crystal.
Most pure and most even the appearance-wise, it's the most beautiful crystal.
Correct. Most, yeah.
Yeah, but when you try to actually, you know, hasten that process and you try to see it, or you try to, you know, create some pressure.
You
by
get the product fast, no doubt, but it is not.
Yeah, but it'll be a, you know, it's not the quality which you wanted.
Exactly.
So I think understanding and this faith of Swami also is like that.
So, Prem, you know, one important question that may come up here is, so why, if it is not sure that if I put in my 100%, I will achieve it, what is the means? It's like a disincentive. But I think that is true about any efforts in the world. For every successful story of a rags to riches case, there are at least a million examples of those who started off in rags and ended in rags.
Those who strived all their life for achieving something which they never achieved.
And they tell the examples, you know, these are glorified examples of a person who could not. It's inspiring, no doubt. A person who was born with polio, but, you know, Wilma Rudolph, they tell that she had braces on her feet, on her legs. And she became a gold medalist in the Olympics. That is great. That is fantastic. But for every Wilma Rudolph, there are thousands, nay, lakhs, millions of other girls who have been born with birth defects, who have not been able to achieve.
And I think we also are unfair to some of these people by saying that this person was actually having more faith. Sometimes I think it not necessarily, you know, when you talk of confidence.
Mm.
Suppose you show me five people and say one person has made it to his or her goal. You might say that, no, she has more tenacity, or she has more. I think we're being unfair to the others.
Correct.
Maybe they might have had more faith and they might have put in more hard work.
But God is giving them what is good for them, and we never know. We never know what each person is achieving, because our thing is, our perception and our understanding is so limited to this time, this place. So I don't think we should get into judging. But the thing is, this much is very evident in the world, that for every person who achieves, you know, where Swami says, having grasped what ought to be grasped, having desired what, hold on to it till you achieve it or fail. There have been some who have achieved, but there have been many who have failed. And that is where, you know, I think we should focus on what Swami has said here so beautifully. He's saying, having grasped what ought to be grasped, having desired what ought to be desired. Should we desire money? Should we grasp power? Should we think of fame? What is it that ought to be? And that, I feel, is only divinity. And because this is true, because Swami has said that any achievements on the spiritual path or on the path of divinity carries forward, while all your material wealth, riches, power, anything that you achieve, will have to leave behind one day.
And Swami says, it is like, I mean, even in spirituality, even if you talk of devotion, there are some things which we ask for which may be trivial. You know, asking for something which is physical may be wrong even in the spiritual sense, though you're asking it from Swami and though it is related to God, maybe it is wrong. But sometimes I think it becomes like the analogy which Swami gives. You get into a train from which you don't have to get on, but it will be attached to the appropriate engines at the appropriate times and you can still reach your destination.
Correct.
I think that is the specialty of asking or seeking anything from God. Okay, Arvind, I think we'll quickly take a break here.
Okay.
We will play out a nice song at this point. And actually, we will dwell a little more into this aspect of, if there is this eventuality of you not getting what you're asking, what is the point in still seeking?
Okay.
Thank you.
నీతోనే గడపాలని మేము విలేపదాలని నీ మాటలే కావాలని గడిచే ప్రతిక్షణం నీతోనే గడపాలని మేము విలేపదాలని నీ మాటలే కావాలని లోని తలపురన్నీ నీకు వివరించాలని ప్రియలన్నీ కర్తకే అంకితం చెయ్యాలని వీచియున్నాము ఆ రోజు కై ఓ నేస్తమా ప్రియమైన బంధమా
beautiful song, Arvind. It brings in a lot of nice memories. And in fact, talking about yearning and all, just to give briefly an idea of this song, you know, this song was composed when Swami was in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. That was the time when Swami had his first fall, and Swami didn't come back to Prashanta Nilayam during June, as was his usual habit. And when Swami was, you know, in Vrindavan, recovering from that fracture Swami had sustained, that time boys had composed this song and sent it to Swami, saying okay. that, you know, we're waiting for the day when we can talk to you, when you'll be
and
back.
And we're reminiscing on the beautiful memories of the past days. And yes, I remember that occasion when this song was composed. Swami heard that song. And I have a special memory of this song also. You know, one of our colleagues, you know, he's working in Radio Sai, he had the chance of going with Swami, accompanying Swami on a trip to Kodaikanal. This song, I'm saying why it is so special. You know, Swami gives us that cold treatment during the time when which he ignores. it is actually more painful than when Swami scolds. If Swami scolds, you know, you can take corrective action, speak to him, communicate with him. But the cold treatment is a time when Swami just stops talking to you. He doesn't praise you, nor does he scold you. It pains so much more because, you know, you feel you're not worthy even of Swami's censure. You're not even worthy of Swami scolding you. In fact, Swami has told that this is a time when he avoids, so that it is like when a highway is being repaired, a piece of road, a part of the road is being repaired. You don't travel on the road so that the repair works can proceed fast and efficiently. So too Swami says, my avoiding you is like that. I avoid so that whatever has to happen, that process happens very fast. And you bet it happens really fast. Because when you miss him, it is so strong. And so then what happened was, this boy, he had this song. And this was his period of cold treatment from Swami.
Mm-hmm.
He was missing Swami so much, pining for Swami. And he did not know what happened. Swami, he was a singer. So Swami was asking different boys to sing in Kodaikanal. And never this boy got a chance. 2-3 sessions passed, he never got a chance to sing in Swami's presence. He was crying and, you know, his heart was weeping every time.
Okay.
And on one occasion, Swami just threw the field open. He said, does anybody want to sing?
Mm-hmm.
And this boy raised his hand and said, Swami, I want to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, okay. I have seen the video of this song, you know. He started singing this very song. O Nestama, O my dear friend. What a loving relationship is this. Such a relationship that I cannot live without you. And every moment I am thinking of the times that I have spent with you. And I am longing for such times to return again. Even as he sang this song, reliving its meaning, he broke down. He could not sing a word more. And what does he see? Right in front of him, Swami is sitting on the chair, weeping just like him. Swami is crying and Swami is telling, Papam. That child is having so much pain in his heart. And Swami told him to sing, and on that occasion, in that session, this boy sang 12 songs, more than anybody else had sung throughout the trip. You know, when I heard this episode, when I saw the video, I'm convinced that whatever Swami does is for our good, and it is exactly as Swami says. If for some reason I'm avoiding you, it is just like you avoid a road that is being repaired so that the repair works can proceed fast. Because every time you feel pain from missing him, trust me, but I know for sure that for every bit of pain that I feel by missing him, 10 times more the Lord is feeling for me. It is always like that. And that is the memory that this song evoked and took me on this digression.
This reminded of a dialogue which Swami had told a boy, you know, kind of confirming this very thought of yours. Swami saying, Inchi Inchi Istanra Niku. Swami said, I will count, you know, every moment
that you have
given for me, and I shall pay you.
Wow.
I mean, you know, coming back to this idea of, are we to be discouraged with this thought that we may or may not get what we seek? And very interestingly, you pointed out that that's the case with almost everything. You know, whether you're going after money, you're going after power, you're going after any other objective.
There's always a chance that you may or may not.
And, I mean, unfortunately, only the ones who are successful are known. And we are kind of made to believe that there's always success at the end of the road. But one thing which Swami has often said is, you know, many times you've heard Swami saying that you will never carry forward your wealth. You have to go empty-handed.
He tells the story of Alexander the Great, who wanted to be buried with his hands stretched wide open to show that, though I conquered the whole world, I'm not taking anything along with
me. Exactly. And, but there are sometimes, you know, when we could say that maybe talent is being carried over. Because when you have young children singing so well.
Child prodigy.
Yeah.
Prodigy.
In fact, you know, today's Morning Glory we played out that conversation with the talent from India's Got Talent, the singing sensation.
Okay, yes, yes.
Rai, I'm not sure of his name.
From Sikkim, right?
Yeah, from Sikkim. I mean, how do you explain such talent? There could be possibly a carryover of talent, maybe.
As we hear people also saying, you know, maybe in his previous birth he was a singer or something like that. You know, such statements are also common.
Exactly. But one thing is for sure, and Swami has also told many times to many people, that your spiritual pursuit is always
spiritual wealth that you acquire is always carried over.
And whatever progress you have made, you have that option of literally, you know, pause and play.
Saving and playing the next level.
In the next birth. And, you know, I'm just reminded of one very beautiful incident which happened to Phyllis Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And she writes about this in her book, The Ultimate Experience. And this was one of the first interactions she had with Swami. And I think for those who are unaware of who Phyllis Crystal is, she's one of the, I think, I wouldn't be wrong in saying this, a very, very spiritually evolved devotee of Swami.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, many people have been sent to Phyllis Crystal by Swami, you know, trying to understand some spiritual nuances. Swami would tell them to go to Phyllis Crystal. Even Isaac Taggart has that experience of Swami asking him to meditate with Phyllis Crystal.
Mm.
And, you know, she also has this past which kind of talks about this spiritual wealth she had accumulated over births.
Mm.
In fact, she says that once she goes through a regression therapy, you know, when you look
regression
back,
therapy.
Yeah, when you look back into your past lives.
Okay.
So that time she sees one life where she's a Tibetan monk.
Okay.
Okay, and she is actually in the middle of a very, very intense spiritual practice.
Mm.
Where she's confined voluntarily into in a cave.
Mm.
Where she's all by herself, absolutely cut off with any human contact.
Mm.
And she's actually doing a particular spiritual practice, where in your mind's screen, in your mind's eye,
mm.
you bring every desire, every attachment of yours,
mm.
and you literally deal with it and you remove it from your mind completely. So it is like you focus all your mind on that. And the practice, as she says, is like, suppose you imagine a screen where your third eye is,
okay.
just behind your forehead. And you bring in all the desires and attachments one by one, and you kind of remove it from your mind.
Through meditation.
Through meditation. And all the while, she was in contact with a master,
hmm.
telepathically, who was, you know, he was in the monastery, but, you know, in a very internal level, he was in contact with her, with him, in that birth, she was a man,
hmm.
and guiding her in this practice. So at one point, she loses this contact with the master.
You know what, just a small thought, if masters can do this, why not the Lord?
Exactly, and in fact, it's very interesting what she concludes in the end of this.
Hmm.
We'll come to that, and she says that she loses contact with the master, and at that moment, these thoughts which she had kept at bay for so many months start coming flooding back into her head.
Mm.
You know, they kind of literally make her mad.
Okay.
You know, they all come flooding, and she doesn't have her master to support her. And at that moment, this monk goes and bangs his head against the wall of the cave and kills himself.
He's mad with the number of thoughts
yeah.
that come.
And actually, this is her past. And all said and done, she has done tremendous spiritual, practices to reach that state. And she had died in that process. Okay, and the interesting thing was, when Swami had called them for an interview, the husband and wife, this was their second interview. So that time, Swami was telling about her husband, he said, you have too much bookish knowledge, you read a lot of books, too much bookish knowledge, less devotion. And then
mm-hmm.
Swami turned to Phyllis Crystal and he says that she has a lot of devotion.
Mm.
Okay, and Swami says she's a good girl, she has a lot of devotion. And Swami materialized a silver ring. Okay, and gives it to her, and Swami tells, whenever you have a headache, rub it in that spot.
Okay.
Okay. And Swami said, it will cure the original cause.
Oh.
Okay, and till now, Swami, she has not disclosed this to Swami, this experience, and she's actually not sure also whether it's true.
Mm.
It's just that it happened in a therapy, but she's not sure whether that past is true. So when Swami says that you rub it when you get that headache, she says, Swami, oh Baba, you know it. Swami says, yes, I know it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I will take care of you, don't worry. And the other thing which she says in that is that dependence on another mortal that had to go in that birth. And that was the reason why she lost that contact. It was not a
okay.
mistake or, you know, by mistake it happened. Again, coming back to the... Saram, dear listeners, very sorry for that break we had. We had a little mini shutdown here and we couldn't... We've just come back on air now. So we'll quickly conclude this discussion, dear listeners, in the afternoon satsang we've been having. And because Brother Chandu is here, he'll be taking the next segment, Love to Love. So I've been coming back to this discussion and trying to quickly wrap up what we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, the important thing, takeaway lesson is to understand that whatever happens is for our good. And it's a very, very important thing because, you know, even though you actually made a mention of it, faith, being having the ability to actually fuel doubt as much as it can fuel, reasoning.
Reasoning, logical reasoning. You know, when you believe in something, the reasoning comes with 100 reasons to support the... When you believe in something, the reasoning comes up with hundreds of reasons to support your belief. At the same time, the minute you get doubt, the same reasoning, the same logic comes up with hundreds of reasons to, you know, stand by the doubt and prove that the doubt is true. And this is where our faith in what Swami has said, in our Swami, on our own, you know, our faith, on our own experiences with Swami, we should hold on to these. Hold on to these firmly and don't waver. You know, because I remember once somebody said, Swami, my faith is shaky, please help me. Swami laughed because there's nothing as a shaky faith. Either you have faith or you don't have faith. It's a digital phenomenon. It's one or zero. Either you have faith or you don't have faith. There's nothing like a shaky faith or a part-time faith or a partial faith. So, the takeaway lesson is, we have to persevere, because among the different pursuits, worldly, that is for fame, for glory, for name, for money, among all of them, the most glorious and the best one is this spiritual pursuit, because this is the only pursuit we can carry forward to other lives at other times, and they will never leave the soul. The other things may go waste, may go bad, but never the spiritual pursuit. Therefore, since spiritual pursuit is the only worthwhile pursuit, let us spend our life, our energies and our time, and let us cherish these moments when we miss the Lord so much, because they are blessings in disguise. They give us so much more than what they take from us. Let us cherish these and feel blessed whenever we miss Him and pine for Him.
Really, Arvind, just reiterating what you said, telling it one more, whatever we are today, whatever little understanding which we have developed and whatever abilities we have to look at world in a totally different way, it is because Swami is present in our lives. You know, it is immaterial of whether Swami has spoken to us so many times, immaterial of how many interviews each one of us got, but just the presence of Swami in our lives has changed the way we look at the world itself. And we need to thank Swami for that, and that itself is the proof of the value yearning and loving God has.
Yes, with that, dear listeners, you know, that technical glitch which forced the system shut down actually somewhat disturbed our satsang also, because it cut the flow and train of thoughts and feelings. Thank you for bearing with us, and thank you for joining us in this satsang, which we, with all our love, gratitude and humility, place at the lotus feet of our Lord, who, and thank Him for this beautiful opportunity to be on air on God's own radio. Be tuned in, because what is coming after this little song is a beautiful session from Brother Chandu, Love to Love. With that, it is me here, Arvind from Team Radio Sai, and
Prem from Team Radio Sai, offering our humble pranams at Swami and this effort of ours at His lotus feet. Thank you and happy listening.
Sweet winds caress my dry heart. Those tender sweet palms fill me with the warmth of your love. Tere bina jeena hai kahan. Tere bina jeena hai kahan. At the break of dawn, just as the golden sun smiles, I feel your warm presence in the midst of the morn. Where'd I be gone without your presence in my heart? Oh, 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 oh. Just as the sweet winds caress my dry heart, those tender sweet palms fill me with the warmth of your love. Tere bina jeena hai kahan. Jina hai kahan. Your standard sweet balm. Fill me with the warmth of your love, Devina, Jina hai.